Hello, everyone, and welcome back. It's Richard Lannon for Set for Success, where we help you create a roadmap to transform your business, career, or life. There are all sorts of stories on how startup companies, particularly in the tech sector, gain business traction and one up the big players like Microsoft, Facebook, or Google. There is a lot of different thinking on how these young startups actually succeeded. And so I decided to enter the words successful companies about startup businesses or successful stories about startup businesses into my favorite everyday internet search engine, Google. And let's face it, we all use Google, don't we? I found some great stories and articles, but there was one overarching article with a theme in it that I thought was interesting. It said that successful tech companies, startups, really do about four things. And I thought, you know, well, heck, why not share those four things with the listeners? So the first thing it said was you have to focus on a key idea. Okay, that sounds like a good idea, you know. So you need to have something like blinders on, it suggested, and so that you are not going all over the place, that you really are focused. The next thing it suggested was think big. Now, I believe that everybody at some point in their lives have a big idea. Heck, I know I've had a few big ideas, and I think my wife wished I had actually actioned on them when I was 21 or 22 or something, because who knows where we'd be today. But the idea here was that, you know, if you take that big idea and you act on it, then you can really take advantage of working with bigger organizations and competing against them. So I thought that was an interesting idea. The next thing it suggested was don't limit your marketplace. Recently, I interviewed Zach Wolf, CEO Exagen Technologies, on the show. And we talked about that. And he talked about that in some details. You should check that show out. For their technology, they are focusing on their core market, but they're not limiting themselves in that marketplace itself, which I thought that was a very interesting idea. And the other thing that suggested was offer a solution to a real problem. Now, this one is important. Years ago, for about 5 years, I worked with government-sponsored startups and met with a lot of different entrepreneurs. And most of those entrepreneurs were technical professionals wanting to create their own business. And I called them technical professionals. They weren't technologists, but they were definitely technical professionals. The ones who succeeded generally had a solution to a real problem. They had a better chance of succeeding. That was a really important lesson learned over that five-year period that as we went through the program, we saw happen over and over again. Sometimes I tell a story when I start the show, and sometimes I sort of try to find some stuff that's a little bit more advice-driven. And this information came Entrepreneur Online Magazine, What Tech Entrepreneurs Can Learn from Startups That Beat Google. I thought it was a great article right away, just on the title alone. So maybe you have a great idea, and you're going to beat the tech industry too, the big guys, the big giants. I don't know. Maybe there's an opportunity for you to do that. I suspect that maybe today we might be able to find out a little bit about that. We're going to be chatting with Gary Brownstone, and Gary is the principal of Catch Fire Investment and Management. Gary, welcome to the show.
Hi, Richard.
Gary, we were having fun just before we kicked off the show, talking a little bit about our backgrounds and everything. You started telling me some great stories about, you know, what you did and that. So tell us a little about Gary.
Sure. So I wasn't always in technology fields, but I always had an entrepreneurial bent. And some people would say my entrepreneurial spirit showed itself in grade 9 when I had an uncle who had an office supply business, and he had me selling school supplies to my classmates. But when I was going through university and doing my MBA, I was working with a pretty large and successful regional company that was acquiring two businesses and about to go through a really rapid growth stage and become a national company. And as a young aspiring business person, I was pretty impressed with the ambitious growth plan. But as we got more and more into it, I realized how stressful it was on the entire organization. And so companies trying to grow often focus on the need for finance. But what we found is there were operational challenges, there were marketing challenges, there were brand protection challenges, quality control, and that growth is really challenging and really stressful and really difficult on organizations, and that it requires sort of a unique skill set in order to help companies specifically grow. And so really, I've kind of focused my career on helping companies through periods of rapid growth. And
okay.
While I've been involved in a lot of startups, more of my career career has been taking small companies and helping them grow into medium and large companies.
Medium to large companies. Right. That's actually quite a really cool background. So you and I share sort of a similar background in that, because I always call it, you know, I like to invest in the success of others, people and organizations, so they become successful. And it's the same idea, you know, like you take that small enterprise and make it into a medium level enterprise and make it into a large scale organization.
Yeah. And a lot of times people who start businesses have, you know, real strong, what I call domain knowledge or technological expertise. And they're able on their industry knowledge and their pure passion to get the business to a certain level. And certainly in Winnipeg, we're really lucky, or in Manitoba, because there are lots of supporting organizations to help people try and launch new businesses. But they bump into the sort of their own limitations, you know, when the business reaches a certain size. And so the founder isn't always the person best equipped to take the company to the next level.
It's interesting that you would say that, because I've met a lot of organizations, the CEO, they built a company and maybe they have 25 employees, maybe they have it to the point where they have 50 employees. And I often see them as almost like the technical strongman, you know, and where they've pulled the company along by their might because of their knowledge and their experience in their field, but they're not always the best person to be running the organization. And I think you're saying sort of the same thing. And I've even had that conversation. You're the strongman of the organization, right. You know, and thought I'd share that.
No, that's exactly right. And often, you know, when you're starting a company, your role in the company is, you know, based on sort of that passionate dream that took you into it in the first place. But when the company grows, the entrepreneur's role changes very dramatically and can take them away from that which they really loved about it that took them into it. So a coder who writes great code, when he's running a business with 25 or 30 people in it, probably isn't writing code anymore.
No, there's a big transition.
Yeah, often they're unprepared for that transition or uncomfortable with that transition, so they look for some outside help.
It's interesting you would say that, because years ago, just before we started the show, you asked me, you know, where did I work? And I mentioned I was in global technology solutions for PricewaterhouseCoopers. And I built my career up on the technical side, but there was one point in time where I had sat down with my supervisor or my manager or whatever, and had that conversation. And the conversation was, okay, now you got to let go of your technical skills and create a whole new level set of skills in order to be able to progress forward. And so I think that's what you're saying.
Yeah, so I describe most of the companies that I work with as, or most of my clients, as being passionate creators and really brilliant on that, you know, the technology side or the domain knowledge side of their business, but often limited in their ability to manage a rapidly growing business.
A rapidly growing organization. Yeah. You know what, Gary, we got to take a short break already. So when we come back, I think what we should do is maybe talk about, you know, what do you need to do to actually rapidly manage organizations. Is that the right words? Growing organizations.
Yeah,
I'm pretty close.
Great.
I'm pretty close. This is Richard Lanfrancet for Success. We'll be right back. Hello, everyone, and welcome back. I'm hanging out with Gary Brownstone. Gary's from Catchfire Investment and Management. As Gary was mentioning just in the first segment, he has a whole background in helping, I'm going to say, technology-based organizations. Is that fair to say?
It hasn't always been technology, but the last several years has been
last several years
focused on technology.
Yeah. Just before the break, we were talking about, and I sort of twisted the words a bit, rapidly expanding organizations and the challenge of rapidly expanding organizations. So maybe that's a place where we should start is what are some of the key challenges that you find that rapidly expanding organizations have in your area of expertise?
Yeah, I mean, the first challenge that comes to everybody's mind is the challenge around financing that growth. And often, you know, that expression, you have to spend money to make money. So there's an upfront investment required to facilitate that growth.
And that's always a challenge, right? Because, I mean, I think in our own personal lives, I think we're taught not to spend money, but to save, move forward.
That's part of it. And the reality is, you know, in some parts of the world, Manitoba included, to raise money for a knowledge-based business, so one that really doesn't have any fixed assets, land, building, equipment, is really challenging. And it's, you know, these are perceived as and often really are high risk investments. So raising money is number one. But I think where people get surprised in growing an organization is it's not just about spending more money and hiring more people. Now you have to deliver on more promises to more, you have to get more customers and fulfill those promises that you make to them. So
yeah, more stakeholders to manage.
Yeah, and growth impacts every aspect of the company. So your sales and marketing will change, your client support will change, your tech support, every element of the operation will be impacted by rapid growth. And so I think taking a holistic approach to how you do that is really important.
Have you found, so you talk about holistic approaches to doing, to handling that, because we are talking about rapid growth. So maybe what we should do is just step back a bit and let's define what rapid growth is.
Sure.
Let's start from there. How would you define rapid growth?
Well, I think typically there are kind of two categories of growth, what we would call organic growth. So maybe a business that's increasing its sales by 5 or 10% a year. And then there's rapid growth where a company wants to double and double and double and sort of grow more exponentially. So I'm not sure there's a clear numeric definition, but it's how steep is the growth curve. And there's not a right or a wrong about that. But growing a business quickly is more challenging in many ways.
Than the 5 to 10% organic growth on an annual basis, which is generally, when you talk about those numbers, I mean, those are really traditional type numbers that I'm going to use the word traditional again, a traditional industry might use. Mm-hmm. But now we're talking about a knowledge-based organization within, I guess, I'm going to say tech sector again. So correct me if you don't want me to use those terms. Mm-hmm. So let's just take a look at that. So now you have rapid growth within those type of things. You talk about getting financing to sort of grow the business. Where do organizations like this try to find the resources, the numbers, the things that they need to be able to move forward?
Yeah, entrepreneurs will tell you they try everywhere they can think of to try. And, what we're finding in our line of work, because really what we focus on doing, Richard, is helping companies create, finance, and then implement those growth plans. And what we're finding is more and more we're able to attract investment dollars from outside of Manitoba and maybe from an investor whose risk profile or risk tolerance is a little bit higher. And also, at the same time as we're raising this money, we're looking to help access global markets. And one of the things about a knowledge-based business, an app, if we were to use that example, is you can access the global market pretty instantly at a pretty low cost.
Yeah, it's a click of a button and you can pretty much do the work anywhere.
Right. You know? So that's why often the growth challenges are really rapid, because companies could scale up to, several thousands of users in a very short period of time, depending on what it is that they're selling. So we look for money in places of the world that typically have a higher risk tolerance. And also that maybe see a market opportunity in their local domestic market for the product that they're investing in here.
Okay.
So we can bring money and market access at the same time.
Are there certain, okay, so now I have to ask, because when you talk about high risk investors, right, that are in different marketplaces, are there certain parts of the world, I'm going to go global on this, that tend to be more open to high risk investments?
Well, everywhere outside of Canada seems to be a little bit more open to it. But, certainly look, if you went to the Silicon Valley, they're all about early stage bets, right?
Yeah,
on companies
yeah.
that may not even have a product yet or a customer.
And with a lot of, I'm going to hesitate and use the word hype, but a lot of hype, if you wish, and you can correct and use another word if you want, and you can see a lot of investment rapidly into an organization that hasn't created anything.
Yeah. So, Silicon Valley is kind of a unique example, but, we do a lot of work in China, which has strong emerging markets and a real need for a lot of different types of technology. We're seeing a lot of demand around ag-related technologies now as feeding the world becomes a bigger challenge. So areas of the Middle East where they will take early bets on different technologies. Certainly Israel has long been referred to as the startup nation because of the bets they take on early stage companies. But other areas of the Middle East, South America, there's some emerging markets there. So we're seeing lots of pockets in the world where they identify a local need or a local opportunity for a product and aren't afraid to take an early, investment bet on that company.
Out of curiosity, then, with these countries that identify a particular market need, which goes back to how I sort of opened the show, right? Like solve a problem, right? Create a solution for a real problem. What stops them from looking inward within their own country or their own industry to solve that problem for them? Why is it that they have to go elsewhere to find solutions for their problem?
Well, I think people will find solutions where, you know, where they find them, and if they have an internal capacity to solve that, and certainly corporate innovation or internal research and development is something the governments of Canada have been trying to encourage for a long time, and people feel we need more investment in those, what people might call productivity improvements. But I think people will find, they'll look far and wide to find solutions to their problems.
Great. You know what, Gary, we got to do something here. We got to make the sponsors happy. We got to take a short break. But when we return, we'll continue our discussion on this whole area. This is Richard Land for Septa Success. We'll be right back. Hello, everyone, and welcome back. It's Richard Landon, and you know the name of the show. I'm hanging out with my new best friend, Gary Brownstone. I always like getting new best friends. I think I refer to people like that regularly on the show, Gary. Gary is a principal consultant, or principal, I guess, of Catch Fire Investment and Management Organization. But Gary, you have a background. I was reading up a little bit. I love LinkedIn. I always go and check out everybody's background. I sometimes wonder if people think I'm, you know, I'm sort of tracking them or something. But I noticed that used to be part of the Eureka Project. And I think it's well worth mentioning because you always hear about the Eureka Project here in Manitoba. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little bit about that experience?
Sure. So the Eureka Project, we launched it in early 2007, yeah. January of 2007. Really with the aim of helping young technology companies and the entrepreneurs that founded them get some support in trying to launch their businesses. And so really the idea of incubation and, in our case, government support for that is to kind of help companies before the private sector would even take a look at them and to be able to offer them some subsidized supports and services.
Yeah, and that makes a lot of sense because, as we mentioned in one of the earlier sectors, I mean, segments, is that any startup organization, the big challenge they have is actually getting the support to start in the first place.
Right.
It's not till later on that either the financial industry or the private sector come in to actually help out.
Yeah, and I still sit on the board of the Canadian Association of Business Incubators. There's now about 150 across Canada, all kinds of different models and different industry focuses, but sharing that same objective, which is to provide accessible and affordable support to first-time entrepreneurs or early-stage entrepreneurs who really need some management help.
Mm. That's a curious question because I've been watching the trends across the country, and I don't know if this question is for you, Gary, but maybe we can go there. When you look at different cities in our country, some are really boasting the growth of the tech sector, mm-hmm. and they're hungry to hire people. And I don't hear some, but from some unlikely places, like small cities like Moncton, New Brunswick, right?
Yes.
This is one of them, and mid-range cities like Winnipeg, Manitoba, too. I mean, we have a growing, bustling sector too. What is spurring that on? What do you think is sort of spurring that whole economic growth on in that sector?
Yeah, I think there's a few things. I mean, you know, globally, we live in an economy that is transferring to more and more to a knowledge-based economy. And I think in Canada and in Manitoba, we're really well positioned to take advantage of that. We've got really good school systems. We graduate really, really talented people. And, you know, having worked around the world, I think Winnipeg and Manitoba can hold its own talent-wise with just about anywhere. So we've certainly got the foundation for it. And, you know, a lot of historically traditional industries have died off. I'm old enough to remember when there was a large clothing manufacturing industry in Winnipeg.
Yep, yep.
Thousands and thousands of people employed. That really doesn't exist anymore. So the economy is evolving and modernizing and, as I said, becoming more knowledge-based. And I think in Manitoba, we have now a 10-year history with a couple of really good incubators and lots of other support programs through the provincial government and other organizations to really help nurture and foster and encourage a technology industry. And, you know, young people are starting to see that because of the nature of technology, they can launch these businesses from anywhere. So, you know, you and I talked earlier that when I came out of school, many of my friends, at least half, left for Vancouver or Toronto and other parts of the world. And now, you know, with the types of businesses that don't require you to have a bricks and mortar presence in a market, people can launch businesses from anywhere. And I think that's encouraging young people to stay
in. You know, I agree with you, actually, because, we did talk about this. This is at break time. And so I know, listeners, we have these little conversations on the side, and we were talking about our career start. And I left Manitoba in 1987 because I had a very specific career I wanted to get into in the management consulting field as an analyst. And I could not find the opportunity here. So I had to go to Vancouver to get that opportunity. But now I've been able to bring all that back. And you know what? A lot of it has been due to being such a knowledge base and business intelligence based economy that now you can work from anywhere, the click of a button, and you can work virtual teams. So I'm just sharing a story so that you can do the things that you need to do. I'm forever on Skype or some other technology where I don't have to leave my office to actually have the meetings that I need to have in order to move things forward.
Yeah, and that's true of our business as well, of Catchfire. Our clients are right across Canada, and our colleagues are really spread around the world, and we find ways to manage that by using technology.
So one of the things I was reading in an article, I think it was a Business Report from the ICT industry, so information communication technology, is that 50% of technology companies do not have a strategic plan. That's what was suggested, right? And I know that you have a background in strategic planning. Where are you in terms of your thinking around strategic planning and what's happening with, I guess, organizations that are not focused in on that?
Yeah, I haven't heard that statistic before, but it doesn't surprise me. And, you know, I always say I could get in my car and, you know, drive to Tuscaloosa if I wanted to, but I'd probably get there a lot more efficiently and on budget and on time if I had a roadmap to get there.
To get there, yeah.
And
yeah,
so
yeah.
I'm a big believer in strategic plans, and a big part of what we do is we create, finance, and help implement strategic plans. So we actually one of the things that distinguishes the Catchfire model is we're not afraid to kind of roll up our sleeves and get directly involved in operations and in implementation of a strategic plan. But listen, companies should have them. You should have a roadmap if you're taking a long road trip. That's not to say that you can't take a detour or change your plans or change your route along the way, but just to have some guiding objectives and milestones to help you know if you're actually making progress.
Yeah, and it probably would help you really focus too and the things that you need to focus in on, especially when you talked about rapid growth, that the organization changes in every way, right? Every way from processes and productivity to the tools that you use to your business development, talking about sales and marketing before, even to your people. You know, there's a lot of big changes that happen in a rapid growth organization.
Yeah, and I think in the technology world, that change happens faster and faster all the time. And so, people are concerned that if you develop a strategic plan, it becomes obsolete before the ink dries. But I think that because there's so much change, it makes it even more important to have a plan or a roadmap
in place to be able to do that.
Right.
Is there any certain size organization that should be looking at putting a strategic plan in place?
Well, I mean, I think they all should. You know, when you're a startup, you need your pitch or your plan to go and get early adopters, either to help you with money or to help, you know, get accepted to an incubator program or to be your first customers. And so you should have a plan of how are you going to get there and how much is it going to cost you to get there and how long will it take you to get there. I think you should have one right from the first day.
Right from the first day. I think what a lot of people are afraid of, and I think you sort of mentioned this already in terms of rapid growth. You know, it's funny, I actually had this conversation about 2 weeks ago with the CEO on the phone, and actually via Skype video. And there we go, just to sort of add that in there. And we were talking about it, and he said a very interesting thing to me is that, and I knew this already, that I do not want a report in my strategic plan. I want two pieces of paper, yeah. And that is it. And I think that sort of speaks to the heart of how accelerated things have come.
Well, and we talk about, actionable plans or actionable roadmaps You know, in the old day, people used to write business plans that were 100 pages long. And not only did they never get read, but more importantly, they never really told the entrepreneur what to do on the day one when you get to the office. You know, how do you, they did market analyses and projections and those kinds of things. And what our focus is really on a roadmap.
What's
step one? What's step two? How do you get there?
Yeah. We're going to take a short break, Gary. And when we come back, I think we should talk a bit more about roadmaps, the peaks, valleys, and detours that organizations can take. This is Richard Lanford, Set for Success. We'll be right back. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. And I am hanging out with Gary Brownstone. Gary, I've been really enjoying the show. Just before the break, we were talking a bit about strategic planning and some of the components of strategic planning, I guess. And you and I are big roadmap guys. I mean, we both are. I believe in the peaks and valleys and detours. But one of the challenges I see with organizations is they get this strategic plan. And that's it, you know, like it can be just one page like we suggested, but nothing is done to implement it. So why is it that strategic plans often don't get implemented? So what is happening there? And what are some of the things that organizations maybe can do to safeguard themselves so they do implement the strategic plan, what they've agreed to do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great question. And, you know, tough to fully answer in the time we have available to us. But I think, you know, some guiding principles, you know, One of the reasons strategic plans don't get implemented, as we've talked about before, is that often what needs to be done is sort of outside the comfort level of the entrepreneur. So taking the example of our computer programmer who's written some good code and really solved a need for a niche marketplace, but dealing with things, you know, when you have 4 or 6 or 8 employees in your company, HR management is pretty simple. But when you have 40 people in your company, HR management is like a black box for a lot of people. Who knows what, you know, what's sort of behind the curtain? Marketing and sales, right? The entrepreneur can drive that sales growth to a certain level based on their own passion, their own network within an industry. That's often where good technological ideas come from. But to take it beyond that, you now have to know how to sort of build and manage a sales force. So I think for a lot of people, it's that, you know, I'll call it the fear of the unknown, or at least outside of their comfort zone to be able to manage. And that's why I think, you know, sometimes bringing in outside help who has had growth management experience in scaling up companies to the next level and letting them support you through that process until you can internalize all that management capacity is a really good way, to proceed on that. There's a lot of ways to grow a company. And we talked before about, you know, sort of organic growth and just sell more stuff this year than last year. But, you know, a lot of companies grow by acquiring other companies or merging with other
merger and acquisitions.
Or strategic partnerships, you know, that will take them into new markets. So there are lots of ways to grow a company. And I think having the support of someone who's been through it a number of times would probably help most entrepreneurs.
Have you been, what organizations, or maybe you can share a story with us of an organization that you've worked through that merger and acquisition? Because merger and acquisition, I've had other guests that talked about that too, and strategic partnerships. And there's another one I like to add in too, complementary alliances. That's the term I like to use because, you know, it's just one of the words I like to use. You know, you've been through it a few times, I gather, the merger and acquisition side to grow your company. Can you give us an example of an organization and what you guys did?
Sure. You know, I have to go, I'll go back a few years because the first technology company that I ever invested in was a company called Careware Software Systems, which I was founded by a computer programmer who got the company to a certain level and then didn't know what to do with it and called me. And so I bought half the company. And we grew that company very rapidly. And at that time, our competitors, we were in a very specific niche in the healthcare sector, so practice management software. And most of our competitors were small regional companies. So, you know, you'd go to Calgary and there was a small company there with 20 or 30 clients, and Edmonton, you know, the same, Toronto, the same. And we wanted to expand very quickly. And so, yes, we were involved in a lot of direct sales to our end users. But as we came across these strong regional competitors, we went and basically offered to buy them and merge their client list into ours. So we acquired 5 companies over about a 5-year period did, which took us to nearly 50% market share in Canada, and then we started launching into the States. Of course, the challenges that you run into is, you know, you've got customers of one company who are now customers of another company, and so maybe the service offering is different. If you're bringing in employees, you've got some cultural differences to deal with. Every company will develop its own culture. These things have to be managed. Even just the successful transition of, just because a client is a client of one company doesn't mean they will remain a client of the company that acquires or takes over that company. So there's a lot of soft skills, soft management skills that are required to make those things successful.
Yeah, no, I have experience in this space too, where years ago I was responsible for a streamlining project. And it's interesting, there's a couple of ways that we did it, but really we had to look at, through merger and acquisition, right? We had to look at several different organizations that came together and look at the duplication. And that's the other challenge, right? I mean, you talk about business processes, for example, when you merge an organization together, and you guys did it rapidly. I mean, five different businesses in 5 years, that's a lot of bringing together. No doubt there's going to be a lot of duplication in those businesses too. So now how do you streamline those businesses and what do you change in the organizations,
sure,
right?
Sure.
You know, it's the business process side of things. And no doubt you're talking about the cultural side of things. You know, beliefs, values, and attitude are always different between every organization. Yeah. So those are some serious challenges you're often faced. What ended up happening with, was it CareWare? Was that
CareWare. You know, the company continues in sort of different iterations. So
sure.
So I sold back my half of the company to my business partner. I was ready to go on to the next project, and we were sort of philosophically heading in two different directions.
You're a serial entrepreneur.
I sold back to him. He merged with another firm. They ended up selling to another firm, which is still running today throughout North America.
Yeah.
So, you know, some of those original customers are still customers of the current entity.
Yeah. So it just grew, took on a life of its own, yeah, you could say, through the whole business cycle and that too. Gary, if somebody wanted to get in touch with you and talk a bit about your expertise and what you do, how would they go about doing that?
Yeah, easiest way is garybrownstone@gmail.com.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's, we're pretty low-key in what we do. Most of our business is word of mouth or referral. And that's the easiest way.
That's, yeah. And I figured it's such, we were talking about it. But the name of the organization is Catch Fire Investment and Management.
So, and as you mentioned earlier, we're on LinkedIn, of course.
Yeah,
we're
on LinkedIn. So there's always access there too. I'm always interested in ideas and way the business. Where do you see, I guess I'm focusing more with the tech sector with you because of what I've read up on your background. And I know we didn't really talk about that beforehand, but where do you see things going in the tech sector? Can we do a little bit of future thinking? Where do you think things are going to go?
Sure. Well, I think that the trends of globalization are going to continue. And I can't emphasize enough, you know, the one piece of encouragement or advice I would give to Manitoba companies is to think big and think way beyond the borders of Canada. It's a big world out there. Things move very, very quickly. There's lots of action, and it's an exciting time to sort of wade into the global economy. But I think in technology, we can expect continued rapid change and rapid globalization.
And yeah, and it's just going to continue on. I no idea how you'd even try to control this in terms of setting borders around it, so to speak, boundaries. We've been having a great show. Like, I love this whole topic, and there's so many questions that come to my mind that I want to ask, but I never can ask all of them, Gary. So it's a wonderful topic. If you had a final thought for our listeners, what would it be?
My final thought would be, think bigger than you've ever thought before, that there's a hungry world out there looking for the output of Manitoba companies, and you just have to go and get it.
Yeah, right on. I like that one right away. Always look for those gems, look for those opportunities, think big and make it happen. I'd like to take this opportunity, Gary, for thanking you for hanging out with me today.
Thanks for
wonderful.
Having me.
Yeah. And the listeners too, obviously, thank you for tuning in. If you have a question, an idea, or thought about today's show, just send me an email at richard@setforsuccess.ca. And remember to do your best, invest in the success of others, and make your journey count.